Welcome back to Conversations and Connections, where we support creating women leaders for life. Before we get going, thanks to our sponsor, Ogilvy Health. When healthcare impact is your goal, let Ogilvy Health be your partner. After a short summer hiatus, we're excited to continue this season with a special two-part series featuring inspiring early and career leaders, Alexia Adamo and Paige Obrey. In part one, we talk about belonging, mental health, and mentorship, where you can tap into actionable advice from Alexia and Paige on finding a sense of belonging in the workplace, prioritizing mental health as you build your career, and identifying mentors to guide your professional growth. In part two, we talk about building community and support, where we discuss strategies to create supportive networks and foster connection, both inside and outside of your organization, with practical tips for building a community that empowers you to thrive. Now let me tell you about these impressive gals. Paige currently works as a digital customer engagement manager at AstraZeneca, where she supports their breast oncology portfolio through the development and execution of digital marketing strategies. She's an alumnus of Wilfrid Laurier University and the University of Toronto. And she also volunteers with HBA as a regional director, where she recently won the Marie Curie Award for Innovation for her development of a new industry partnership initiative. In her spare time, Paige is an accomplished dance educator at the Dance Class in Ontario, and she loves to spend weekends outdoors camping and hiking. We also welcome Alexia, who thrives at the intersection of compliance, communication, and innovation with her experience in regulatory strategy, stakeholder engagement, and process improvement. Her career began at Health Canada as a regulatory officer after graduating from the University of Ottawa with a degree in biomedical sciences. Next, she achieved her goal of transitioning to the pharmaceutical industry, now working at AstraZeneca as a regulatory affairs associate, supporting global oncology regulatory submissions and ensuring compliance with health authority requirements. Beyond her day job, she volunteers also with the HBA as the Regional Director of Marketing, where she develops content strategies to promote events and is passionate about developing future services that support career development for recent life science sector graduates to help their transition from academia to industry. Hanging out with these two was beyond fun, and I really hope you enjoy our chat. Hello, everyone, and happy fall. What are we talking about today? Well, for starters, we've got a cool new twist for you today. Our first kick at the can, chatting with multiple guests. We're going to go with the flow and see where it takes us. So a big welcome to Alexia Adamo and Paige Obright. Hello, gals. Welcome to the cast.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
So today we're going to take a closer look at what it's like being early in your career and navigating the world of the Canadian pharmaceutical industry. Your stories are about two paths that have ended up in the same place with very distinct ways of getting there. And so, you know, before I get going, I just got to say that this podcast is powered by some pretty strong, intelligent, newer in career rock stars who I absolutely love working with and learning from. Shout out to Melissa Magaeus, Megan Lepage, and Janella Beltran for all of your hard work and your brilliance. You really are pure joy and making magic happen with this cast. Everything about today's episode has been built by you from the ground up, and I have learned so much from all of you already, and I can't wait to share you with the world and our listeners. So to get us going today, Alexia and Paige, could you share a bit about your backgrounds and what inspired you to pursue your current career path? So I thought maybe, Alexia, you could kick us off.
Sure. So yeah, a little bit about me and my background. Right now, I work for AstraZeneca in regulatory affairs as a reg affairs associate. But that it didn't start that way. I've been through quite a couple internships before then. Also did my undergrad at University of Ottawa, which is kind of where the love for STEM really started.
Woot, woot, so I've the had, nation's capital.
Yes, exactly. So I've had some previous experience in various areas through the internships that I was able to complete during my undergrad, and kind of just landed in regulatory in one of those internships, and I've been in there ever since. So it's been a couple of years, around two and a half years in regulatory. And overall, I've just been inspired throughout my short-lived career so far, but inspired by the potential to make a real impact on people. And at first, I wasn't really sure what that meant, but now I know that in my current role, I am really able to do that. So I do have a passion about science and the healthcare field, and I'm able to contribute pretty directly now in the pharmaceutical industry doing that. I also feel really passionate about science communication and compliance, healthcare access. And I didn't know that at the beginning, but through the experiences that I've had, I realized that that is what I am really passionate about. And I feel like working in pharma is just the perfect place for me to be able to see that through, in my career.
Wow, sounds great. Paige, how about you?
Yeah, so I started my career doing my undergrad at Laurier in health sciences. And like many in that program, I went into it thinking that I wanted to be a doctor, but very quickly realized that I wasn't in it for the long haul, like some of my colleagues and peers at school. So I was challenged to kind of really think about what I like about health sciences, what inspires me about healthcare, and maybe a different way for me to fit into a patient journey. So that's when I started exploring biotechnology, where science meets business. And I got involved with the Laurier Biotechnology Organization and realized that this was a really good fit for me, where my science brain and my kind of more creative business-oriented side could come together. So from there, I did my master's at the University of Toronto in biotechnology, like many people in the industry. And there was an internship component. I did my internship at Roche as a commercial associate supporting their ophthalmology portfolio. And that was a good mix of a lot of different functional areas. I got to touch medical, marketing, patient services, digital, and really explore a lot of the different functional areas that make up the commercial side of a business. And then from there, I made the jump to AstraZeneca as a commercial innovation manager. I did that for about a year, being the product manager effectively for Veeva CRM and events for AstraZeneca Canada. And now I am a digital customer experience manager, which is on the digital marketing side. And I support our breast oncology portfolio. So that's a pretty recent move. I've been doing that for 2 months. And that's where I am today. So, as you can see, Alexia and I had different paths, but we're both at AstraZeneca. We see each other around the office, and I'm
Yes.
sure we'll dive into that a little bit more.
It feels like, you've done so much already in such a short time. Interested in seeing where you go. As earlier, career professionals entering the, the job market, I imagine there were many, realities and challenges that you came across in your job search, and wondering if maybe you could elucidate some of those for us. And let's start with Paige this time.
Sure. I was fortunate enough that the MBiotech program guarantees a 100% placement rate for internships. So I didn't have to worry about getting my foot in the door so much as where to go next from your first job. And the biggest challenge that I experienced was that a lot of organizations have gone through these transformations, and they've taken some creative approaches to their roles that allow people a little bit more freedom within their role to grow and stretch, which is a great idea. But it does make growth challenging at times, because sometimes somewhere along the way we lost some of these intermediate positions. And so it's challenging to gain breadth of experience and depth of experience, and to show that you're ready for the next step. So, for me, when I felt like I was ready for a new challenge, it was really hard to figure out where to go. Do I want to make a lateral jump into another functional area, but, stay at the similar level just to get some new experiences? Or do I want to take on an informal stretch project? How am I going to take that informal stretch project and turn it into a bullet point on a resume that's going to be meaningful to a hiring manager? So For me, that's where my challenges lie, was really how to make a jump and how to figure out my next step after my very first job.
You know, when we were talking previously in previous conversations, you had mentioned something that really stuck with me. You had said that when you were making these decisions, it was just about, it felt right. It just felt right. And so going with your gut. And so I thought that was such an astute observation, being, you know, newer in your career. So thanks for that answer. Alexia, what about you?
Yeah, so for me, as I mentioned, I did have a privilege of having some internships through my undergraduate degree. And that really did, I think, give me a leg up compared to other students who might have not had that experience, especially coming from like biomedical or a STEM background. They kind of teach you to be very academia focused, and they don't really show you how to like be in the workforce in any way. So I think being in the co-op program for my specific program like changed the game completely. But even still, I felt like when I was ending my undergraduate degree, I felt like I was entitled to a job just because I like did a hard degree and I did a degree. Oh, so I'm gonna get a job. Like, I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about thinking about what I actually want to do. A job, I literally thought a job was going to land like in my lap. Like, and I don't know if that was just immaturity or something. I'm not sure. I think also maybe my family as well was always so, oh, you know, you're the first one to do university. You're gonna have the best job ever. And that was in my brain. So then I actually got out of university and I was like, wait a second, that is not the case at all. There's no job like waiting for me. I actually have to apply to jobs. So I did have a lot of struggles, especially right after university, because I was applying to jobs, nothing was coming about. I had internships, but and I had a lot of internships in the public sector, but they were on a hiring freeze. They were not hiring at all. So I was like, okay, the public sector was where I thought I was going to end up, but they're not hiring, and that's all my experience. So I'm not really sure where I go from here. So I ended up taking a job doing admin, like printing paper. Like I went from studying like super difficult concepts and working like a really good job in the government to printing paper like every day for like a biosafety association, which I know, I mean, it was still healthcare related, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do.
Wasn't your jam? No, no.
No, I didn't go to university to print paper, let's just say
No.
that. So yeah, like that was a really terrible time and it took a toll on me mentally for sure. But I just kept applying to jobs. I did my absolute best. And then it just so happened I was very lucky that there was an opening within the public sector, and I ended up getting a job through word of mouth, actually. So I think, honestly, for me, the biggest challenge was just kind of having that perseverance to, okay, I'm gonna take this, for example, printing paper job. But it's not going to define, like, okay, this is going to be my career as a printing paper. I just couldn't let that get me down because I needed to, like, keep going to make sure I did get the job that I wanted. And at least, you know, I never think of it as like it was a waste of time or anything. I think of it more, I was like, I was building character. Now that's an experience that I have. And I got to meet like some really great people at that job. So I can still bank that as like really valuable time and experience that I spent. But I was still lucky enough to kind of go more into where I want to go, which was in the regulatory, like healthcare, Health Canada type of route at that time. So, yeah, I think that was the biggest challenge for me is just not getting myself too down at the fact that I wasn't getting the yeses from everyone that I thought that I was going to get out of university.
Alexa, you have no idea how much I relate to what you're saying. So I don't know that that's a new to career, early in career scenario only, let me tell you. Look, all right, let's dive into some topics that I know when we've had discussions before, we decided as a team, as a group, that we really wanted to talk about things that maybe don't often get the spotlight, and you know, to have some real conversation and talk about things that matter and are meaningful. And so let's do it. We all said we're going to do it. Let's do it. So a couple of the topics we discussed as a group were belonging, mental health, and mentorship. And so these things, you know, aren't important, you know, just at the beginning of your career, or the starting out of your career, but it, you know, is relevant for all of us. And so, I'll, you know, Alexei, I thought we would start off with you in this section by talking about, you know, during your journey to your current role, you know, you alluded to this in your previous answer. What mindsets or practices helped you persist through those setbacks or moments of self-doubt, if we can call it?
Yeah, I think I experienced just so much imposter syndrome. And there's also, I see it through people who message me as well. Like, I do get a lot of LinkedIn messages of people saying, like, how did you get this job? Like, what did you do? Like, as if there's like some magic formula or something, but there isn't. I think just really making sure that I was taking a step back and thinking, okay, what is a small win that I had today, this week? Okay, like, I applied to 100 jobs, got zero responses, but, you know, I did the thing. I put myself out there and applied to those 100 jobs. That's a bonus. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
So I think just realizing, like, okay, you're, as long as you're putting in the effort, like, something is going to come back from that. So just recognizing the small wins, or maybe, you know, you didn't get the job, but you got an interview. That's like, even just getting an interview is such an amazing step, and is so hard to do these days, I feel like. So yeah, just this, really recognizing the small wins is really something that helped me a lot. And another thing that really helped me through those difficult times too, was kind of never telling yourself that you can't do that thing. So for example, there was a job posting and I was like, oh, you know, I could apply to this, but they're not gonna, I'm not getting it though. Like, I'm not gonna get this job, but I'll just, so maybe I shouldn't apply. I don't know. I think that what really like allowed me to open my eyes a little bit is that I just applied to anything. Like, and I can't just tell myself beforehand without even trying, like, oh, that's not gonna happen for you. I think that is just doing yourself a disservice. Definitely just, I mean, this also sounds a little odd, but let someone else decide that you're not the right person.
Don't self-exclude. Somebody said that to me. Don't self-exclude. Mm-hmm. Yes. I feel like I've been having the same conversations over the past recent months. That's what it, small wins, get the small wins and don't self-exclude. That is great, great takeaways and tips. And we are not laughing at you. When you said the 100 jobs, we're all smiling. And so
yeah.
Know that I'm not laughing like at you. I'm laughing with
100.
You. Yeah. Oh, so funny. Okay, Paige, you know, what strategies have you used to embrace any kind of discomfort? And that, you know, when we've talked before, you've mentioned about how, what I've found really intriguing about you is that you've taken things that were uncomfortable and you really turned them around and made them into these kind of growth opportunities. So I was wondering if you had anything to share about that.
Yeah, I think I told you in one of our previous conversations that I think that vulnerability is one of my superpowers.
Absolutely. I was hoping you were going to go there.
I definitely find and have found that anytime I have had a conversation where I walked away and thought, ooh, was I a little bit too real just now? Did I say something that was like a maybe a little too close to my heart that I should have kept, you know, kept to myself. Somewhere along the line, those moments that I maybe had a little anxiety about, someone has come up to me afterwards and said, I'm so glad that you said that. I was thinking it too, or I was experiencing the same challenge, or I haven't spoken to anyone about that before. And so that's become a theme, I think, in my career, is not to shy away from saying things that are uncomfortable, and they have been growth opportunities for me in a professional sense as well, because by saying things like that, you get the opportunity to participate in work streams. If someone else is passionate and they say, hey, there's actually a group of us here at AstraZeneca that really care about DE&I, thank you for sharing your experiences. Do you want to be part of this work stream? And then getting some of those leadership experiences. It's also a great way to work on your communication skills and your ability to influence and persuade others to care about things that you yourself care about. And I think that overall, those feelings that Alexia mentioned about imposter syndrome, I think, come up anytime we're vulnerable, because we maybe share that we have an insecurity or we have something, that weakness or that vulnerable side, and then you're allowing others to maybe see that you feel like an imposter or you have these sensitive feelings. But all in all, we're all human. We're people before we're employees, and
you know, hallelujah on that one.
Really appreciate the opportunity. People appreciate the opportunity to connect on that level, because at the end of the day, we spend 40 hours a week together. So
I applaud your courageousness, and I am with you. I am somebody who also tends to be very vulnerable, and I regularly question whether I've been too open. So so doesn't matter what vintage you're at, you know. I think that I applaud having the courage to be yourself and being authentic, because I think that'll take you far in life. I know it's taken me far, but I regularly think about, did I say too much there? You know?
I also want to add maybe that sometimes if you do walk away and think, I think I said too much, that's an opportunity to reevaluate your boundaries about what you do and don't want to share. Sometimes there is that little voice saying, okay, yes, that was a step too far. Other times, it's a sign of growth. And so learning those internal cues and the difference between, oh, this is uncomfortability because I stepped outside my comfort zone, I took a risk, versus this is uncomfortability from the fact that I crossed a boundary I didn't know I had. Those are two different kind of gut feelings. And so it's important to reflect on which one you're feeling afterwards.
It's so funny. You gals don't have these questions already. We didn't give them to you. And you are totally teeing me up for my next question. It's like perfect. It's so perfect. Okay, so this can be for either of you, whoever wants to answer. Have you ever needed, you know, we're talking about boundaries and thinking about protecting, you know, your mental health in during stressful times. And I guess, you know, have you ever had scenarios where you felt that you've had to do that? And if so, you know, what kind of advice would you have for maintaining these boundaries?
Honestly, in terms of like the work-life balance type of boundary, it's interesting in my current role how to navigate it, because I am in a global role. It is hard to know, like, or respect, you know, when someone's working hours might be or might not be. The lines kind of get blurred a little bit. So there are times when, you know, I'll get pinged at 2 a.m. and I'm in a deep slumber at 2 a.m. usually.
Yeah.
So I think lately what I've been trying to implement is, unfortunately, I do have work on my personal phone. Maybe that's something I need to get rid of, but I just decided that, okay, between the hours of, let's say, 7 and before, like anytime before 7, I am not allowed to open Teams. I'm not allowed to open Outlook. I even have like certain boundary settings, like on certain apps on my phone, that I'm able to, like, I'm not able to log on to them for like a certain amount of time. So I think that that's been really helping me lately, because I will tend to want to answer that person as early as possible because I want to get something done faster so that patients can get access to medications faster. And I mean, like, at the end of the day, I think it'll benefit me and my whole team in the long run if we respect those boundaries, because then everyone's going to be burnt out and things are not going to get done. So I think just really setting the boundary of when I want to be on and when I want to be working. And then when that time is done for the day, it is done. Of course, if there's like an urgent submission and, for example, I need to be on at work, then that's kind of a different story. But if it's just not super urgent, then I won't respond until is necessary. And I also think just blocking off my calendar. Like today, I'm doing this call with you guys and it was really, really important. So I said, okay, we're gonna block off the calendar. I am out of office between 1 and 3. And you know, just making sure that everyone is aware that I am still going to get my work done, but I am going to make sure that my schedule is blocked off for those times and I'm not checking anything during this time spending with you all. So I think just really setting those boundaries to make sure that you don't overwork yourself is really important. And being able to recognize that as well is a huge superpower, I think. I recently had to even step away from HBA, from Healthcare Businesswomen Association, you know, just a little bit, lowering the hours, because I recognized that I was being overworked in multiple aspects of life, not even just work-wise, just personal-wise as well. So I think recognizing when it is time to step back is also really important.
Very good points about the global work. I did some work with some global colleagues as well. I think that's so true. Even when you're trying to move projects along and you know you have to catch people by a certain time of day. But very good that you had the opportunity to work on a team where you could set those boundaries. Did you have anything to add there, Paige, or you want the next question? Your pick.
Maybe just a little bit to add, because I don't work in a global function. Everyone works at the same time as I do. So I think I know I'm very lucky that way.
You are lucky.
But yes. But I'm very fortunate that AstraZeneca has a great culture when it comes to this. And both of my managers here have sat me down and said, we understand that there are appointments that you need to go to during the workday, like doctor's appointments, for example. They're only open 9 to 5. You have our trust and permission to step away for an hour or two at a time if you need to. And for some reason, I have found that so incredibly difficult. To say, I'm shutting my laptop at 10 o'clock. I'll be back at 11. I'm not going to check anything. I'm going to go. I'm going to focus on this personal thing that needs taken care of. And I think that what it comes down to for me that I need to continue to work on is that the culture of an organization can only get you so far. You have to do the rest and take responsibility for the boundaries that you set. Mm-hmm. Because even though I've been given this permission, if you will, from my managers, I am the person standing in my own way of that boundary. So true.
Yeah. Sorry. I whacked the mic. Everybody, I got a new mic. I'm so excited about this new mic, but it's super sensitive. I whacked it with my arm. I'm like talking with my arms because I'm never on camera. So, that is you're right. Ultimately, you hold the power, right? You hold the power to control your own world. So that is an excellent addition. Okay, so let's go back to imposter syndrome, because I know we talked about that at length in previous discussions. And I don't know if we had anything to add there in relation to, I know there has been work done with leaders. We're talking about senior leaders, and particularly when you're interacting with people who are, you know, at your level and peers or in leadership. Do you have any, let's call them actionable kind of tidbits or advice that you could offer for anyone who's struggling with, you know, either rejection from not getting a job or not getting a project that they're interested in working on, or people not, you know, not hearing what they have to say, or I guess imposter syndrome as well. Any thoughts there?
Yes, I think so one of the best pieces of advice that I got in my career when it comes to presenting to senior leadership is that there's a reason you're in the room, and that reason is that you know the most about what you are working on. And I think that has really helped me with my imposter syndrome in terms of believing that I have a seat at the table. What I struggle with a little bit more is that self-perception and being hyper aware of maybe how I'm presenting when I'm in those rooms. And so I think that just really comes down to grounding yourself in, these are my strengths, this is why I'm here, this is what I have to say, and just being as authentic and energetic, passionate, and confident as you possibly can, because everyone in the room was once where you were and can empathize with maybe being the youngest person in the room or the least senior person in the room. and they know what that feels like. And really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter as much to them as you think it does. It matters more to you. Mm-hmm. And again, that comes back to my theme of like, sometimes we stand in our own way.
Yeah, you know what you said, what you had said when I walked away with it. It's been a few months since we've had these conversations, and I learned so many things from you too that it really challenged a lot about what I thought about myself and how I think. But you said, let me find it here, challenge your perception of yourself and your sense of self. And ever since then, I've been doing that mm-hmm. because of you. So you've instilled that in my brain.
Thank you.
So it's a great answer. Okay, look, so we've talked about before, you know, we've talked about many things, but Alexia, you had made a comment that really stuck with me because I am somebody who believes in this wholeheartedly. You said the importance of finding your tribe. And, you know, you said that you have done so in many different ways, and with the HBA community in particular, building, you know, mm-hmm. community and support, you know, are keys for successes in life and in your career. And so I was wondering, Alexia, if you wanted to comment on how did you find your tribe in, you know, the professional setting in the community, and, you know, what impact has it had on you so far?
Yeah, so I've been wanting to tell this story. So basically, how it all started, I guess, was I was never really finding my tribe, you know, like at the beginning, like when I first started my professional career, I was really shy and scared and just kind of keeping to myself. But I was in a position in life, I guess, in my career life, where I was really unhappy and I didn't know where I was going. I knew I wanted to go into industry, but I didn't know how, and I felt really alone, and it was very confusing and just lonely, and I didn't know what to do. So I said, okay, like, it is a choice for me to either sit here and do nothing, because that is a choice in itself, or I can choose to do something about how unhappy I am and really find like where I belong so that I can live a happy and fulfilling life and career. So I ended up finding through stalking, many hours of stalking on LinkedIn, which we all do.
I do that too. That's why I'm laughing. So funny. I call myself that. Yeah, that's so funny.
So I ended up finding from one person in industry, for example, saying, oh, there's this association called HBA. I think you should really join. You should take a look at their page and see if they have any like job postings or any events happening. And so I ended up also talking to Danielle Portnick, who was like, you should volunteer and you should sign up for HBA. So I said, okay, sure. If you're telling me that that's what I need to do and is going to get me to where I want to be potentially or help in just any way, I'll do it. So I ended up, you know, joining HBA, but I'm like, oh, there's no one really in Ottawa that I thought.
That's where we met for the first time.
Exactly. So I put myself out there. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to this HBA Ottawa event, which, by the way, when I saw that there was an Ottawa event, I was floored. I was like, wow, I need to go to this, even though I'm really terrified and I don't know anybody and I have no idea who's going to be there. I'm going to take myself there. I don't care how. I have to go to this. So I ended up going and I was the first one there, like completely by myself. And the first person I saw was Nicole. And it was just so like seeing you in particular, I think you were the perfect person that could have been like the first person that I saw because you were such like just such a bright light in the room. And I was like so terrified and scared of being alone at my first networking event like ever. So it was just so, so refreshing to have someone kind of welcome me with open arms and just like talk to me like we had already known each other somehow. So finding HBA, like ever since then, I was like, wow, HBA like is amazing. And I need to make sure that I keep these connections with these people that are in the room today. And it has helped me so much. Like I even got to meet Paige through HBA as well. And I had to make a huge move like to Toronto for my position at AstraZeneca. So that transition in itself was so scary because I was leaving my friends and family for this job. And I was thinking, wow, is it like worth it to just do that whole switch for this? Like, is this what I even want? And Paige was just like so kind in helping me with the transition and even, you know, taking me out for dinner, like when I arrived, and just, you know, keeping in touch at the office as well. It just really helped my transition and has made my life a lot easier. So HBA is the best, and I'm not biased, I promise.
And didn't you have, and you don't need to disclose the person or in which way, but didn't also be part of you getting the job that you're currently in, didn't you have some connectivity with somebody who was in HBA as well? So it helped you in a job function or job decision making as well, no?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I can't definitively say like, oh, HBA got me the job, but
of course not.
But,
no.
But yeah, so the hiring manager for my position, she's also in HBA. So I kind of used HBA as like a connection point between us. And yeah, like I said, like, I don't know if that helped in any way, but it definitely was a bonus 100% for me to be able to have that personal connection with someone who, was interviewing me. And, you know, maybe it did help in the decision, the final decision. Just being able to talk about that with her really helped also ease my mind during the interview as well,
yeah,
to know that I had a personal connection in some way with this person I've never met.
Yeah, look, that wasn't meant to be an HBA plug at all, but I think
but it's great.
You've found some good value in volunteering your time, and I think it has, you know, helped you as well, right? You know, professionally and personally. So, you know, we also talked about mentors, and you know, Paige, you in particular had some thoughts that you had shared about finding, you know, related to being a sponsor versus a mentor. And, you know, what roles have sponsors, mentors, coaches, allies, you know, what have they played in your career so far? And what did you learn about distinguishing between the differences amongst those titles?
Yeah, I didn't understand that there were multiple different roles until I started at AstraZeneca. I think it was maybe my second week of work, and there was a coaching and development session where we talked about what's a sponsor, what's a mentor, what's a coach, and what's an ally, what are the differences, that it really came into focus for me. I remember when I was feeling a little bit stuck in my first ever position, and I was trying to figure out what my next step was. And I thought what I needed was coaching. And so I found someone in the organization that I really admired, and I asked if she could coach me. But I didn't know what I wanted out of coaching. Mm. And I didn't realize that coaching is supposed to have a defined goal. What I really maybe wanted was a mentor, someone to answer my questions about what to do and where to go from here, rather than a coach that's helping me develop a skill. Similarly, I think knowing what a sponsor is, having someone who's going to go to bat for you, who's mm-hmm. going to speak highly of you behind closed doors, who's going to advocate for your career progression, is so incredibly valuable, but it's also a little bit intangible. You don't go and ask someone to be your sponsor the way that you ask someone to coach you or mentor you. So I think if I had any advice for someone going into their first job, is to maybe do a little research into what each of those roles are and how they can help your career. And then think really critically about when you're feeling stuck or when you're looking for a new opportunity, what type of guidance and what type of support you need, so that you can ask people. Everyone's eager to help. Everyone mm-hmm. wants to help you in your career. They just don't always know how to help you. So mm-hmm. it's super important to ask for what you need and also ask the right person, which, you know, that takes a little bit of intuition and trial and error. And it's definitely not something I feel like I've mastered, but now that I have the language to define all these different people and who they are in my life and in my career and how they support me, I feel like I've got my feet under me a little bit better in terms of how to get the support I need.
Well said. That's all of those roles are important in our career development. And I also do the same. So no matter what stage of your career you're in, all of those roles are important. Did you have anything you want to add there, Alexia? And you want me?
Yeah, no, I do actually. Okay. I think something that just came to mind that I've kind of experienced in the past when it comes to like mentorship in general is it's really important to know like what you want out of a mentor and also like really go about it intentionally. Because I find a lot of the times I was just like, oh, I need a mentor, and I'm scrambling and I'm messaging all these people and I want answers too fast, but I don't actually know like what I want the answers to or like what is like the next step and like why do I want a mentor? Like really being able to think about what it is you want out of a mentorship is really important. And I think also maybe you find a mentor sometimes in the workplace or maybe outside of the workplace and it doesn't fit. Like it's okay if a mentor doesn't fit. You realize that after maybe, and that's okay. There's just obviously a right way to go about ending a mentorship. And sometimes that can be difficult, but I think it is really important to also know like when it is just not the right fit for you anymore so that your time isn't being wasted, the other person's time isn't being wasted, and you're able to find a mentor that can maybe better support you. That was just something that I've experienced recently and, you know, having a mentor, but I realized later on, oh, maybe they can't help me with this. And that's totally fine. They were just in a different area of regulatory than I originally wanted to learn about. And that's okay. And it just, it's okay to go another route, basically.
You know, I recently did this list as I was exploring different opportunities, and I did a list of all the people who've helped me in my 24 years of working in my career, and I had pages. It was really amazing. Like I had pages of the lists, and so now I feel that with the experience I have, I make all the time to share with people who, whenever they reach out, I always make the time to help. And I've never been turned down. That's the other thing. When I have needed help, nobody's turned, you know, everybody loves to help. So
stay tuned for more from Alexia and Paige in the next episode of Conversations and Connections.